All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Bio 231. It is March 7th, and we're going to start talking about gross anatomy of muscles today, muscles of the head and trunk. We're going to talk about that today, and guess what's happening next time? It's the big yellow line right here. So we do have another lecture exam on chapters 6, 7, 8, and 9. So bones and skeletal tissue, that's the introductory chapter on bones, and then axial skeleton, appendicular skeleton, and joints. All right, so that's going to be on the exam on Monday. And then we'll have a lecture a week from today on muscles, other parts of the body. All right, so everybody's aware of what's happening. There's one lab that still has to take a practicum this afternoon. Okay, that's the way it goes. So we still have this projector over here. Okay, who's ever doing that? Stop it. Turning that projector off. Anybody have a clicker turning that off? No. I'm just kidding. Okay. Oh, and it's doing something. Again, maybe it will turn back on. We'll pay attention to it. Okay, so that's the deal. So we're going to start the muscle today. So I think I can just put it away like that. And then we want to get some pictures going. So you can't see what I'm doing, unfortunately. Just the way it goes. At least you can hear I'm doing something. What chapter is that? Not sure. Nice enough. Okay, let's talk about how we like to name muscles. All right, so this is just some nomenclature, and this is going to be pretty helpful because that means you don't have to memorize every particular muscle. If you know nomenclature, you know how to speak about them and label them by various attributes that a muscle has. So you can just look at a muscle, and even though you've never seen it before, you could probably even name it. All right, just by some of these things that we're going to talk about. And remember, we could take a whole muscle like a biceps brachii and cut into it and look at a cross-section of the whole muscle, and we see some fine structure inside the muscle. And those are what we call bundles, muscle bundles. But the scientific name for a bundle is called a fascicle, right? And so sometimes we can characterize or categorize or even name muscles on the arrangement of those fascicles. Right, so that's what we're going to look at. So muscles have different shapes and different actions because of the arrangements of fascicles that make up the muscle. These are patterns, just the patterns. All right, one kind of muscle is a circular skeletal muscle. Some of you have seen this in lab. They're always going to be called an orbicularis muscle. And a really nice example of orbicularis. All right, I'll just slide that in right here. Here's an orbicularis muscle, and in two locations where we have an orbicularis will be around the mouth, in which case we're going to call that orbicularis oris, standing for oral cavity. Too bad I can't grab this thing and put it up around the eye, but there's also an orbicularis oculi muscle. All right, so anytime you see a circular skeletal muscle, it's going to be an orbicularis of some kind. And then the second name is going to refer to what location on your body it exists at. Okay, so that's a pretty easy one to see. Another kind of muscle, right, with the, and you see the arrangements of fascicles within the muscle, right? So that's what we're actually paying attention to. Not just the overall shape, but the arrangement of fascicles. Another arrangement of fascicles, instead of being circular, maybe they're all going to be parallel to each other. And a good example of parallel fascicle arrangement will be here, for instance, the sartorius muscle. And let me get the sartorius muscle. All right, so here are parallel fascicles. Can you see all the fascicles just running in straight lines right next to each other? All right, another good example we look at in lab will be the sternocleidomastoid muscle. Right, would be another example of a strap-like muscle, and the sternocleidomastoids, I see, This illustration right here, here are the sternocleidomastoids, and you can see they're just strap-like muscles, and you can see the fascicle arrangement inside both of these muscles right here. And even the scalenes are strap-like muscles. Another kind of fascicle arrangement would be, for instance, fusiform. These are parallel, but the ends of the muscles are tapered. They come to a point as opposed to a blunt end. So these muscles here, the ends are very blunt, but some muscles actually taper to a point, and it's still parallel fascicle arrangements. Okay, but fusiform, some examples would be the biceps brachii. So the belly of the muscle or the midpoint of the muscle is really, really thick, but the ends, either the origin or insertion of the muscle, are very narrow. Fusiform just kind of describes the shape of maybe like something like a fish that has a pointed nose, and the tail is kind of pointed as well, and so it just allows that fish to move through the water very easily, right? But I'm just describing the shape more than the motion, right? The motion of the biceps is not any different than the motion of, for instance, that sternocleidomastoid, right? It's just the particular shape of the muscle. So this would be a nice example of a fusiform muscle, okay? Convergent is another fascicle arrangement where on one end of the muscle, the fascicles are separated, right? But all of the fascicles then converge to a single point. And a good example of that would be the pectoralis major muscle. Pectoralis major in the upper thoracic cavity, you can see the origin is very broad, right? It goes along the clavicle and the sternum and along some ribs, but all of these fascicles converge into one point on the humerus. So this is what we call a convergent fascicle arrangement. And then we have a number that are pennate. And pennate just means that they kind of are arranged like a flag on a flagpole. So how many edges of a flag are attached to a flagpole? Just one edge, right? Just one edge. So think of a flagpole with a flag attached to it. Unipennate, a good example of this would be a flexor pollicis longus. A flexor muscle is a muscle that causes flexion or causes a decrease in angle between two bones. And pollicis, for instance, refers to your thumb. Okay, so this is a flexor in your thumb, and you could probably show me the action of your flexor pollicis. Flexion would be like this, okay. All right, so where do we find that at? Okay, here is another example of a unipennate muscle, extensor digitorum longus. For instance, in the leg, here is a broad tendon, a very long tendon, and all the fascicles attach at different locations along this really long tendon. And so it's kind of flying like a flag. We call this unipennate. Sorry about that buzz. My system is really misbehaving today. Bipennate would be an example of a muscle, right, where there is the muscle on one side of this long tendon, but a muscle on the other side coming off of it. That would be a bipennate. And a good example of a bipennate we have right here is the rectus femoris, which is in your thigh, your anterior thigh. All right, so here is the common insertion for both of these groups right here of muscles. That would be a bipennate. And then we have a multipennate arrangement. For instance, in the deltoid, where it is just it's basically just a compound bipennate muscle. So here's a bipennate muscle, here's a bipennate arrangement, here's a bipennate arrangement over here. And a good example of that will be on the top of your shoulder. That's a deltoid muscle. Okay, so that's muscles by their pennate arrangement. It all depends on the pattern that the fascicles make. All right, let's talk about some interactions between various kinds of muscles. So this is a little bit of physiology. And if you have a couple muscles and they all produce the same kind of motion, we call those synergist muscles. And a good example of synergist muscles will be the biceps brachii and brachialis. Both of these muscles cause flexion at the elbow or flexion of the forearm, Yeah, so you probably should all demonstrate what flexion at the elbow is. Flexion at the elbow is like this, okay? And the first muscle that you run into is the biceps brachii, but deep to the biceps brachii is the brachialis muscle. And since they both produce flexion, we call these synergists. They work together to perform the same kind of motion. So taking a look at a figure that's in your textbook, let's see if we got both of these muscles. I'm not sure we have both of them on this diagram. We don't. We only have, for instance, one muscle illustrated in this diagram right here. So let me find another picture. Let's take a look at this diagram right here. Okay, so here's somebody's neck. Here's the right neck. Here's the right shoulder. Here is the biceps brachii. And you can see that it's sitting right on top of this muscle right here. And you can see a little bit of it on edge right over here. That's the brachialis. So these are both in the anterior arm. Right? They both insert into some locations in the forearm. So when these muscles contract, it causes flexion at the elbow or flexion of the forearm. So good example, brachialis and biceps brachii. Right, as far as synergists. A prime mover muscle will be one muscle of a group of muscles that work together. Right, so we're talking about a group of muscles that are synergists. It's usually one of these muscles that produces most of the work when that whole group contracts. And when you flex the forearm, both the biceps brachii contracts and the brachialis, and it just so happens that the brachialis is the strongest muscle in that group, and so it is the prime mover. A lot of people think that the biceps brachii is. That's a pretty strong muscle, but it's not as strong as the brachialis for flexion in the forearm. And good thing about lab, because you'll get to see these different muscles in lab. All right, so prime mover is the more important of the two in producing that particular motion. All right, so we got synergists, we got prime movers. We've got two more classes of muscles, and that is antagonistic muscles. Antagonistic muscles are muscles that work in opposition to each other. They produce the opposite motion. So if one muscle produces flexion, the antagonist is going to produce extension, right? If one muscle produces supination, the antagonist is going to produce pronation, right? If one muscle produces plantar flexion, the antagonist is going to produce dorsiflexion, right? So that's why it's important to know all of those different motions that we talked about last time. So as a good example of antagonistic muscles is the biceps brachii and triceps brachii. The other thing that probably you realize is that these muscles are antagonistic to each other, but their location is also opposite each other in body compartments. So the biceps brachii is in the anterior arm, and the antagonist is going to be in the posterior arm. And just because of that arrangement, then it means that those muscles will be antagonistic to each other. Just like all of the muscles in the forearm produce flexion of the wrist or flexion of the digits in the hand. Those are flexor muscles. Where would you want to look to find extensors of the wrist and extensors of the digits? You could probably feel that by producing that motion, or you could figure it out, and that is what the posterior forearm. So if the anterior forearm produces flexion, the posterior forearm produces extension because they're in opposite body compartments. All right, and that's the purpose of these diagrams that are in your book right here. Too bad that projector didn't come on. Okay, which is just a really nice simple illustration that shows you that in opposite body compartments, for instance, anterior compared to posterior in the arm, you have flexors in one compartment and extensors in the other. Same thing for the forearm. Flexors in one body compartment and extensors in the opposite body compartment. In the lower appendage, the same thing is true. Extensors of the knee are in the anterior thigh. Flexors of the knee are going to be in the posterior thigh, just opposite body compartment. And down in the leg, okay, the flexors of the toes, right, are going to be in the posterior compartment. Extensors of the toes, for instance, will be in the anterior leg. And we can carry this theme on to even the vertebral column. Muscles that cause flexion of the vertebral column. Can you show me what flexion of the vertebral column looks like? What does flexion of the vertebral column look like? I'm asking you guys because I can hardly do it anymore. It's what? This motion here. That's flexion, and this is extension. So where do you find flexors of the vertebral column? In the anterior part of your body, anterior neck, right? Stomach muscles will cause flexion. And where are the extensors going to be at? If the flexors are anterior, the extensors are going to be posterior, the posterior neck, for extending the cervical spine, and back muscles for extending right at your back. All right, so just automatically think in opposite body compartments. All right, so those are antagonistic muscles. Fixators are the last class of muscles. These really don't move your bones around, but these are muscles that fix a bone in a particular position, so that other muscles that are attached to it can do their job properly. Some good muscles that do that are muscles that hold the scapula in position, which is your shoulder blade. Right? And there are a number of muscles, for instance, like the biceps and triceps that attach to the scapula. And where they attach to the scapula is the origin. What part of the muscle is the origin? The more movable end or least movable end? The least movable end. Right? So the biceps and triceps attach to the scapula, which is the origin, and that will work just fine as long as the scapula doesn't move. So there are other muscles in the back that hold the scapula in position so that the biceps and triceps can do their job properly. If the scapula is moving around, flopping around, then the biceps and triceps can't work properly. So there are special muscles that hold the scapula in position. And we'll learn what some of those are. Like maybe a good example would be the rhomboid muscles. And what is a rhomboid? Does anybody know what a rhomboid is? It's a geometric shape. Okay. And it's like a square, except it's kind of skewed a little bit. It looks more like like a diamond or something. Okay. And we have those in the back for fixating the scapula in position so that the biceps and triceps and other muscles can work properly. All right. Continuing on with nomenclature, these are really good things to know about. The sign-in sheet is going around. Don't forget that sign-in sheet. I don't know where it is. Maybe halfway through class. Oh, it's down here already. Fantastic. Pass it around again. Sometimes we name muscles, all right, by their shape, sometimes by their location, sometimes by their relative size. So let's go over some of these rules so that you don't have to memorize just everything. All right, in chapter 1, we learned body regions, like brachial region, axillary region, right, and femoral region, popliteal, all these different regions. And sometimes we name muscles if they're located in that particular region. Like the brachialis is in the brachium, which is in your anterior arm, which makes sense. Intercostals, costa refers to ribs, so these are muscles that exist between the ribs, intercostal muscles. And let's see if I have any pictures of some of these things. Not exactly. Any pictures of where these are. All right. Sometimes we name a muscle by their shape. You could give me an example. What's an example of a muscle by their shape, which we talked about? Okay, deltoid is on the slide right here, but what's another one by its shape? Yeah, it has two heads. How about orbicularis? What's the shape of an orbicularis muscle? Circular, right? So that's a very common theme that's used in naming muscles, by their shape. And another really good one would be deltoid over your shoulder, okay, because it's triangular shaped. Sometimes we name muscles by their relative size. Sometimes there's muscles that are similar to each other in the same body compartment, produce similar kinds of motions, and there might be a group of two or three or maybe even four muscles, right? And so the maximus is going to be the largest one of that group Minimus would be the smallest one of that group. Some good examples would be the gluteus maximus, very powerful muscle for extension at the hip. As a matter of fact, that's the prime mover of the hip right there, gluteus maximus. Gluteus minimus is going to be the smallest one, and there's also a gluteus medius, which is an intermediate size. All right? And then you might have some strap-like muscles in your forearm would be a good example, or even in your leg. And there could be one that's the longest in that group, and so incorporated in the name is going to be longest, and then there could be a really short one, and that could be called minimus or brevis. All right? So knowing these terms will help you really easy when you look at a muscle. Other by the direction of fascicles and muscle fibers, like rectus abdominis. Rectus means straight. So this is going to be a muscle that aligns itself straight superior to inferior in the abdominal compartments. And oblique means that it's not going to align itself with any of the three major planes, right? So it's not going to be transverse. It won't be coronal, won't be sagittal. Oblique means that it's going to be at an angle, right? And there are a couple different layers of stomach muscles that run at an angle to the general axis of your body. So there's an external oblique, and there's another layer that's deep to the external. What would we call that? One that's deep to the external oblique. It's still at an angle, so it's going to be an oblique stomach muscle, but it's going to be, instead of external, it's going to be internal. Yeah, internal oblique. So you know a lot about muscles already. All right, here is nomenclature that looks really complicated when you first look at it and intimidating, but it's not. It's really easy, and it's really helpful, okay, because it names the muscle by its origin and insertion. So when I give you the name of a muscle and ask you for the origin, if it's in the name of the muscle, then it's really easy. All you have to do is make sure you have your reading glasses so that you can read the word, right? And a good example of this will be the sternocleidomastoid muscle. This might be one of your favorite muscles to learn about, okay? And if we use origin and insertion in the name, the origin is placed first and the insertion comes last. And we can combine different terms in anatomy by putting what between them? An O, like sternocleidomastoid, right? So these are bones or parts of bones that determine what the origin and insertion is. It's always the origin that's first, and then the last part of the word is the insertion. All right, but let's go over origin again and insertion. Remember, muscles usually have two ends. One produces a lot of motion, and the other end of the muscle hardly produces any motion at all. Which is the end of the muscle that produces relatively little motion? Is it the origin or insertion?
Origin.
It's the origin. And the other end of the muscle that produces the most motion is the insertion. Okay, so origin first. So the origin of this muscle is the sternum, right? Because you remember sternum. And cleido refers to the clavicle or the collarbone. Those are the origins of the muscle, and the insertion is the mastoid process. So let me show you where that is. We have a pretty nice picture of that in your book. Okay, so we've removed a lot of tissue from the neck, and here's the sternocleidomastoid, and this is really easy to see in people. You can watch people on TV, newscasters, singers, when they're singing, this muscle like pops right out of their neck because it's stabilizing the cervical spine. And here we can see the clavicle and the manubrium, which is part of the sternum. So sternocleidomastoid, this right here, is what end of the muscle? The origin, and the insertion is mastoid. What do you know about mastoid? What do you know about mastoid? It's a process. And you know where the mastoid process is? It's right behind your earlobe, the big massive part of the temporal bone, which we see in cross-section here, a nice coronal section. All right, so when this muscle contracts, does your sternum move or does the mastoid process move? It's the mastoid process because it's the last part of the name. And indeed, if you contract your sternocleidomastoids, you have one on the left, one on the right, that causes flexion of the cervical spine. All right, if only one contracts on, for instance, the right side, that's going to cause a right lateral rotation of your head. If the other one contracts, That's going to produce a left lateral contraction. And if you want your head to stay right smack in the middle, then they both contract equally so that, right, you're looking straight ahead. Sternocleidomastoid. So it tells you the origin and insertion, and if you know the origin and insertion, then you should be able to figure out very easily what the action of that particular muscle is. So that's a really handy way to name bones, by origin and insertion. That's the location of attachment points. Sometimes a muscle will have more than one origin or more than one insertion. The sternocleidomastoid is a really good example of that. You can see it has, what, two separate origins? Though we don't incorporate that scheme in the name of things, but there are other muscles that we do. For instance, the biceps, right, has two origins. The triceps has three origins, okay, and the quadriceps has four origins, okay? And some of these muscles have different names for these different muscle groups, okay? Some we just call different heads, like the short head and the long head of the biceps brachii. One is just a little bit longer than the other. All right, and so we'll take a look at that, number of origins. Maybe I can show you biceps pretty quickly. Okay, so here is an example of the biceps brachii. All right, and you also have a biceps femoris. But where would you find the biceps femoris or biceps femoris? That's going to be in your lower appendage, in your thigh, your posterior thigh, hence the name femoris, because that means thigh. But brachii refers to your arm. So there's a difference between the biceps brachii and the biceps femoris. And we can see the two different heads for the biceps. One origin is the coracoid process on the scapula, and the other origin for the long head goes through this intertubercular groove and attaches to the supraglenoid tubercle, that little tubercle right on the superior margin of the glenoid fossa, okay? So that's a particularly good muscle to take a look at. All right, lastly, we can name muscles by the action that they produce. This is really handy, right? Because maybe somebody's going to ask you on a practicum what the action of a particular muscle, and if it's incorporated into the name, then it's, I guess, what we call a no-brainer, right? Okay, like a flexor is going to produce what kind of motion? Flexion, all right? And then eventually you're going to become familiar with what body compartments produce or have muscles that produce flexion. So flexors of the wrist are going to be in the anterior forearm. All of those are going to be flexors. And where are we going to find extensors? In the posterior forearm, okay? What about adduction? What is the motion adduction? It has to do with your legs, could be your arms, could be your digits. Adduction is when you bring all your body parts closer together toward midline. All right, so adduction, when you bring all your fingers together, when you add your fingers together. All right, so in terms of your arm, adductors are going to be between your trunk and your arm because remember, a muscle can only shorten, it can only pull. So those muscles are going to pull your arm down to your side. Adductors, on the other hand, are going to what? Going to raise up your arm in this location. So if the adductors are in the medial part of your arm, where are you going to find the abductors? On the lateral side, which is runs right into the deltoid. Okay, so the deltoid is a good example of an abductor, and we're going to look at some adductors later on, but they're going to be medial. Same thing for your leg. Abductors are going to be lateral. They're not very powerful because we don't abduct our hip very much. Right? It's much more important to have strong adductors that bring your legs together because what do? All day long? You're standing on your legs, and if your legs fall apart, what's going to happen to you? Well, you're going to fall right between them. You're just going to fall right on your butt, right? So there are strong muscles that are adductors to make sure that your legs are together so that you don't fall between your legs. All right, so let's analyze a muscle. All right, here's the name of a muscle. Extensor carpi radialis longus. Sounds really long and complicated. Okay, it's got four words. What's the action of this muscle? Extension. Okay, and what part of the body is it going to work on? the carpals, you see it right here, carpi, extensor carpi. And we kind of talked about that already at the wrist. All right, so you got flexors of the wrist and extensors of the wrist. So what body compartment is this extensor carpi muscle going to be in? Anterior or posterior? It's going to be in a posterior forearm compartment because those are extensors, and you can actually do this little exercise during a test or a practicum or during lecture, right? Extensor carpi radialis, right? So you could have some muscles that are medial in the forearm or lateral in the forearm. So the radialis is going to be which one, medial or lateral? There's some over here that cause extension, some over here that cause extension. And the radius bone is lateral, so it's going to be one in the lateral forearm. I can kind of feel it working right here. And longus. You might have a number of extensor carpi radialis muscles, but here's the longus, which means of that whole group, which one is that? That's going to be the biggest or longest one, okay? Because you might have a couple in that location. So that's really good to know muscles in that way. All right, so we've talked about muscle action by body compartment, and this is probably a good list, probably for you to memorize or go to Get Body Smart, which is, it has a bunch of animations for muscle actions, right? And just look at a particular motion and relate it to a particular body compartment. So let's go over some of these things. Flexion of the head. Okay, or flexion of the cervical spine or flexion of the neck. Those are all going to be due to anterior muscles in the neck. All right, and what about the antagonistic motion? Would be extension or hyperextension. You can hyperextend your neck a little bit. Those are not going to be in the anterior neck, but in the posterior neck. Okay, in terms of trunk, and we're talking about vertebral column, just like the head right here. Right, vertebral column flexors are going to be in the anterior trunk, like maybe the rectus abdominis, and antagonistic muscles will be in the posterior trunk. And we're going to call all those erector spinae muscles. We're going to take a look at some erector spinae muscles in the back. That's for extension. Forearm flexion. Forearm flexion, okay, is going to be the anterior arm. For extension of the forearm, so flexion of the forearm, anterior arm, extension of the forearm, posterior arm. So for flexion, it would be biceps brachii or brachialis. For extension, is going to be the triceps in the posterior arm. So always think of opposite body compartments. All right, for carpal or digit flexion, all of those are going to be in the working across the wrist. Those are going to be the anterior forearm muscles. And extensors of the wrist, extensors of the digits are going to be in the posterior forearm. All right, and thigh muscles that work on the leg. So remember, your leg is between your knee and your ankle. Anterior thigh muscles, those are going to be the quadriceps for extension. All right, so the quadriceps are going to cause this motion, like a kicking motion. Right, that's extension. And so where would you find flexors at the knee or flexors of the leg? Posterior thigh. Usually we call those the hamstring group, but that's where the semitendinosus, semimembranosus, and the biceps femoris are. Those are the muscles that make the hamstring group in the posterior thigh. And so another important motion, dorsiflexion and plantar flexion. These are antagonistic motions. And so they're going to be in opposite body compartments in the anterior leg, right? Those are important for dorsiflexion, lifting your toes up off the ground at the ankle, okay? And the muscle there is going to be the anterior tibialis because you have the tibia right there. This is a muscle that's anterior to the tibia. The muscles that force your toes into the ground at the ankle are not going to be in your anterior leg. They're in the posterior leg. And you've probably all noticed that. You ever see anybody riding a bicycle when you're driving home? Okay. What does their posterior leg look like? Because they're pressing down on the pedals all the time. They're plantar flexing in order to get motion into their bike. And so the muscles that are in their posterior leg are big and huge and massive. That would be a gastrocnemius muscle, okay, that are pushing their toes into the pedal. plantar flexion. All right, so this is really handy to know origins and insertions by body, action by body compartment. All right, let's look at a couple muscles by some important characteristics. And I have a list right here of just a couple locations, five different locations in the body. So head muscles, we're just going to pick one and analyze it. And the one in the head is called the occipitofrontalis. Right? And you've probably heard of occipit before. What does occipit refer to? The occipital bone. And what about frontal? What does that refer to? Another bone, okay, like the frontal bone. So here's the muscle that goes from the occipital bone to around the area of the frontal bone. Most muscles attach to bones so that when a muscle contracts, the bones move closer together. But there's one region of the body where it deviates a lot from that scheme, because muscle will attach to bone on one end, but for muscles in your face, they attach to skin that's on your face instead of another bone. All right, and these are important for facial expression. And facial expression is a very important form of communication. And this is one of those muscles, where one end of the muscle is attached to a bone, namely the occipital bone, and the other end is attached to skin that's right on the surface of the bone. So the frontal bone, the skin right above, right superficial to the frontal bone, in particular skin, and you're exercising that muscle really nicely right now, okay? Skin right at the eyebrows. So this muscle right here, okay, raises or elevates the eyebrows. So remember the origin, the first part of the word is the occipital bone. When this muscle contracts, your occipital bone doesn't move, but it's what? The second part of the name of this word, which is skin, which is superficial to the frontal bone, which is your eyebrows. So the origin is the occipital bone, and the insertion is skin above the eyebrows, and when that muscle contracts, it causes elevation. So let's take a look at elevation of the eyebrows. I've lost the cursor. Ah, here it is. Okay, so here is a really nice illustration of a head, and here is the occipital bone. Here's the frontal bone over here. I'm going to have to get a different cursor maybe. Okay, here's the frontal bone right here. And we can see that this is one muscle because they contract together. There, I actually see two separate muscles connected by some connective tissue right here, which is a very broad and flat and thin tendon. Okay, that's called an aponeurosis. Any kind of broad, flat tendon is an aponeurosis. This particular one, since it's on top of the skull, is called the galea aponeurotica. And it connects the occipital belly that's attached to the occipital bone to the frontal belly of the occipital frontalis muscle. All right, and when this muscle contracts, the occipital bone doesn't move, but it's the skin above the eyes or eyebrows that move, so it elevates the eyebrows. Okay, and as you realize in anatomy, sometimes a particular structure can have more than one correct name. And this is the case with the occipitofrontalis muscle. Sometimes it's called the epicranius. Right? And what does epicranius mean? What does epi mean? On top of, like epidermis is a layer superficial to the dermis. Epicranius just means on top of the cranium. And if we call it the epicranius, then we should realize that there are two particular muscle bellies that make the epicranius up. There is the occipital belly by the occipital bone and the frontal belly by the frontal bone. And sometimes we call this the occipitalis muscle, and sometimes we call this the frontalis muscle. And if you use occipitalis and frontalis, that's how we come up with the name occipitofrontalis. Right? It all just kind of makes sense. All right. If you want to view the actions of some of these muscles, let's go to Blackboard. Okay, so that you can view various animations of these things. But we got to log in first. See if that works. Looks like it's working. Hooray. Hooray, cursor. Okay, that's terrible. Cursor is just not working. We can't get the, I'll have to show you that a week from today. Okay, but I can tell you, all right, and I'll demonstrate it in lab. I've demonstrated it for three labs. I'll show you guys in lab a little bit later on today. It's called Get Body Smart, and you can log in and look at some muscles, type in a muscle or click on a muscle, and it will actually show you what a particular action is, but it will also tell you what the origin and insertion is. And we'll show you where a muscle is on your body. Maybe I have... Oh, you're not seeing what I'm doing. That's because of cursors. I can't get it over to the other screen. But, here's a cursor. Far out. But now I can't see. Yeah. Oh, good. That's perfect. Perfect. All right, so I clicked on anatomy. So I'm in Blackboard. Oh, but you know what I could do? I could move this over to here, but now I really can't see what's going on.
Can I move that one too?
No, that's okay. I'm going to go over here and let's see if I can do this. I want to do weekly assignments. Where's weekly assignments at?
Down?
Wonderful. Okay, and then I want to go to muscles. How far does this go? That's as far as it goes. Muscle tissue, here we go. Muscles of the body. Is that on the screen? Good, it's on the screen. You can see it. I can more or less see it. Get body smart. Right here. And now let's look at muscles of facial expression. Very last one. They don't have a lot of muscles in here, but I think they have the one we're looking at. So here's a nice illustration of some muscles in somebody's head. All right, so I can see the frontalis muscle right here, but of course we can't see the occipitalis because it's way in the back. All right, here's the orbicularis oris, orbicularis oculi, so you can practice naming some of these muscles, but that's not really the beauty of this site. The beauty of this site is when you click on a muscle, okay, you can do a virtual dissection. You can get rid of a bunch of muscles that you don't really want to look at, okay, or you can put them all back on and turn the labels on and off. You can practice labeling where these muscles are. All right, so let's put all the muscles, but then let's put in our gloves and scalpels and scissors and get rid of some of these muscles that we're not quite so interested in. All right, and then we're left with the frontalis right here. All right, so you can see the origin and the insertion right above the eyebrows. And if you want to see what the action is that's produced, all right, so we got origin, insertion, and then here is action. And notice what happens to the cursor. It shows you that there is a link, a hyperlink. So if we click on that hyperlink, what's happening? I can't see it from this angle, but if we slide over, can you see what's happening to that illustration? It goes into motion. And what's happening? Huh? The eyebrows are elevating. Okay? Did you see that? Could you see that on the screen? Yes. Okay. All right, so this is a particularly handy kind of website to make sure you know what the origin is, the insertion, and the action. The other thing that you don't have to pay attention to is the innervation, the name of the nerve that goes to this particular muscle to get it to activate. So that's something you're not responsible for in this class unless I make some... There are just a few muscles that I want you to know what the innervation is. Some muscles that you can't live without. You can live without the occipital frontalis just fine. Right, if your eyebrows didn't move, would that affect your daily life? Probably not too much. But there are other muscles that you definitely need to use every minute of your life. Could you think of a muscle that you need every minute of your life? muscles for breathing, for instance, for inspiration. All right, so there is a muscle that's called the diaphragm. We learned something about the diaphragm already. When it contracts, you can inspire. You breathe air into your lungs. And I do want you to know the name of that nerve when we get to it. Okay, so don't forget about get body smart. So let me put this one away for now. That link is in Blackboard. Okay, and I probably want to even put this one away for now. Oh, what I could have been doing is charging the mouse maybe. Because it's just not working. Okay, let me charge. Maybe I can get it working again in just a minute or two by charging it. Okay, another muscle. So that's a neck muscle. And so the sternocleidomastoid. Let me see if the sternocleidomastoid is in Get Body Smart. No, we were talking about what? Occipital frontalis. Ah, now we're going to go to sternocleidomastoid. Let me look at... Get Body Smart. Let me work on it over here. Neck. Okay, I guess they don't have it in there. Okay, sternocleidomastoid. Now that probably will be your favorite muscle. And I showed you sternocleidomastoid. Let's go back and find it. Sternocleidomastoid is here. This is a muscle, and the name is the origin and insertion of the muscle. Okay, and the first part of the word is the origin, which is sterno. What does sterno refer to? The sternum. So here's the sternum, and here is one part of the sternocleidomastoid that goes to the manubrium, which is sternum. The other part goes to the cleido. Cleido refers to clavicle. Here's the other head that goes to the clavicle. And since it's the first part of the word, what kind of motion is produced on these bones? A lot or a little? Just very little, okay, when the muscle contracts. And then here is the last part of the word mastoid, which refers to the... You should know something about mastoid. Mastoidal refers to a part of the temporal bone right behind your earlobe. And here I see it right here. That's the mastoid process. So when this muscle contracts, what moves? The mastoid process, or does your sternum and clavicle move? It's the mastoid process that moves because it's the last part of the word. All right, so you have a bilateral arrangement of the sternocleidomastoid. You have one on the right. You also have one on the left. And when both of these contract, right, and they're in the anterior, they're anterior to the vertebral column. So when they contract, guess what happens? You have this motion right here. What's that motion? As opposed to this one. Okay, so that's flexion of the cervical spine or flexion of the neck. Sternocleidomastoid is important for flexion of the neck, anterior muscle. Where would you look to find muscles that extend the neck? In the posterior part of the neck? Okay, so let's go back to the sternocleidomastoid. If they both contract, that causes flexion. If only one contracts, if the one on the right side contracts, guess what happens? You have a right lateral rotation. If the other one contracts on the left side, you have a left lateral rotation. Okay, so that describes the action of the sternocleidomastoid. All right, trunk muscles. So here you have the origins and insertion. That's a pretty easy muscle because it's in the name. So it's something you don't have to memorize. Trunk muscles. Rectus abdominis. Let me find the rectus abdominis. I can almost see it. Ah. Right here. All right, so what kind of muscle is going to be a rectus abdominis? Is it going to be circular? Is it going to be square? Is it going to be triangular? Rectus refers to straight. right? So rectus abdominis is a straight muscle in the abdominal region, right? So here is anterior trunk, and here is the rectus abdominis muscle. It has some compartments to it. Okay, it has some tendinous intersections between some of the muscle bellies right here, and I have no idea why they call it a six-pack, because on each side there are four different compartments. Maybe you only really see three because these are hidden by clothing, maybe. Okay, so rectus abdominis, we have one point where it attaches to the skeleton at the xiphoid process and some of the intercostal cartilages. And the other attachment point is going to be the pubic bone. All right, so when the rectus abdominis contracts, what moves? Does the pubic bone move, or does the xiphoid process move when that muscle contracts? What's moving? The xiphoid process moves, all right? So the xiphoid process is the insertion, and the origin is going to be the pubic bone. Okay, so that's a good way to analyze this particular muscle. So, and what's the action? If the xiphoid process gets pulled anteriorly to the pubic bone here, that is, what's that? That is, somebody said flexion, and you're right, that's flexion of the vertebral column. So that's an important flexor of the vertebral column. And let's see, is that what the slide says right over here? Hopefully. What does that say? Vertebral column flexion. Ah, very good. That's exactly what I said. Just rearranged a little bit. All right, some more muscles. Biceps brachii. Biceps brachii. We've kind of looked at that one already, but let's look at it again. Where are you going to find, what body compartment has the biceps brachii? Yeah, the brachium, which is what? The anterior arm. And the biceps brachii, where did it go? I think, is this it right here? Let's take a look. Nope. Right here? Yep. Okay, so biceps brachii. Oh, and this we can look and get body smart. Matter of fact, let's go, you have your textbook at home. You can get to get body smart if you have a computer at home, but you all should have a computer. Move this over so you can see how I'm mousing around. Biceps brachii, muscles that work on the anterior forearm. Nice. And you can expand this using control plus or minus on your home computer. All right, so the biceps brachii is this one right here. We can practice naming some of these other muscles, pectoralis major, deltoid, and the brachialis is going to be deep to the biceps brachii. All right, so let's move, get rid of some of these others. The deltoid just disappeared. Probably the pectoralis major is going to disappear next. Oops, pectoralis major. Some more muscles are going to disappear. Oh, maybe if I do this. Okay, so we're left with the biceps brachii. And the short head, the origin of the short head goes to the coracoid process. The long head, here's this long tendon that goes through the intertubercular groove all the way to the glenoid fossa, that a supraglenoid tubercle on the glenoid fossa, and the insertion, what does it say the insertion is? The radial tuberosity, right, on the ulna. So if we click on these, we can see the insertion, we can see the origin, and what else can we do? We can also watch the actions, like flexion. That's one of the actions of the biceps brachii. Okay, and the other is that it's also important for supination. Okay, so supination is not what you see right here, but the action, when I move this tab over, This is supination. Right? So when you bring the palms of your hands anteriorly. So that was pronation. Here is supination. And of course, the innervation you don't have to know. All right, so make sure you know the origins and insertions very nicely of the biceps brachii, since we're going over it in class quite a bit. And then what else do we have? Ah, triceps brachii. All right, what can you tell me about the triceps brachii? With what we know, with what we just talked about. It's antagonistic to the biceps because it's in an opposite body compartment. You've got good pictures in your book, but let's get the get body smart working. Okay, so we can see some more muscles. Here's the deltoid, trapezius, latissimus dorsi, and here's the posterior arm, so this is the triceps brachii. And we can get rid of some of these muscles. Let's dissect them away. There goes the trapezius. Okay, there goes the deltoid, teres, supraspinatus, infraspinatus, some teres muscles. Latissimus dorsi is gone. That leaves us with the triceps. Okay, the insertion of all of these different heads of the triceps goes across the angle, goes across the olecranon, across the elbow, and inserts into the olecranon process on the ulna. All right, and so it's going to pull the ulna posteriorly, so the action will be extension of the forearm, or you could say extension of the elbow. Either one will be exactly the same. Okay, and then you can look at the different origins of the different parts of the triceps, like the medial head. Okay, the medial head is mid-diaphysis of the humerus. It's not the infraglenoid tubercle, so we can get these muscles away. Aha. Okay, so you can see mid-diaphysis of the humerus. Right, and the medial head will be the medial aspect of the humerus. The lateral head will be the lateral aspect of the diaphysis of the humerus. And of course, the action is still going to be extend. So the triceps always is going to be extending because they all have a common insertion into the olecranon process. Okay, I think we have one last muscle. Gastrocnemius. Gastrocnemius is an important muscle for plantar flexion. So let me find gastrocnemius. All right, so when we say plantar flexion, what part of the body is going to be moving? Your foot is going to be moving. Where would we look to find muscles that move the foot? They're going to be in the leg. They're going to be superior to the ankle because those muscles will work across the ankle. Right, muscles that work on the foot. Let me move this back over. Oh, that's a different kind of illustration. Gastrocnemius. Let's click on gastrocnemius. All right, so you see the leg. Now, what part of the leg are we looking at? Anterior or posterior? Posterior leg. And gastrocnemius is the superficial muscle. I see it right here and right here, right? And the origin will be the condyles, epicondyles of the femur, and the insertion, both heads of the gastrocnemius, so there are two heads to the gastrocnemius, both come together and form the calcaneal tendon or the Achilles tendon, and it inserts into the calcaneus. And remember, muscles can only shorten, they can only pull. So when this muscle contracts, it pulls this posterior part of the calcaneus superiorly, which does what to your toes? It forces them into the ground when that happens. All right, and that motion is what we call plantar flexion. Okay, so plantar flexion. So gastrocnemius is in the posterior leg. What about muscles in the anterior leg? What kind of motion are they going to produce? Dorsiflexion, the opposite motion. So opposite body compartment will produce the opposite motion. All right, the other thing that I probably would want to show you kind of quickly, muscles that work on the foot, is that the gastrocnemius has a synergist muscle. What's a synergist muscle? Works to perform the same kind of motion. All right, and we looked at the biceps brachii and brachialis in the arm. Let's look at a synergist muscle to the gastrocnemius in the, what body compartment is this muscle going to be in? If it's a synergist muscle, it's going to be on the leg, but the gastrocnemius is in the posterior leg. If it's a synergist muscle, where is the synergist to the gastrocnemius going to be? It's going to be in the same body compartment. All right, and the name of that muscle is the soleus. Let's look at the soleus. The soleus is deep to the gastrocnemius. That's why Get Body Smart is pretty handy, because we can dissect away the gastrocnemius muscle. Not away yet. All right, so there the gastrocnemius is gone, and we're left viewing the soleus muscle right here. The soleus also inserts into the calcaneal tendon, right? And along with the gastrocnemius, and then the calcaneal tendon inserts into the calcaneus. So the soleus is a plantar flexor along with the gastrocnemius muscle. These are synergists because they're in the same body compartment. So if a muscle, if you have a number of muscles, say two muscles that insert into the same location, namely the calcaneus, it's got to produce the same action, right? And if it's the same body compartment, it's generally going to produce the same action as well. All right, so those four or five muscles that I just showed you on your lecture notes, right? Make sure you know those for the lecture exam, right? Because I'm picking on them in lecture. Biceps, triceps, brachii, gastrocnemius, rectus abdominis, okay, sternocleidomastoid, occipital frontalis. You should just know those backwards and forwards without thinking, okay? Okay, so the sign-in sheet is, going around again, make sure you sign the sign-in sheet. Well, what color is this light? Okay.